that late at night, it's 2 o'clock, 3 yes. o'clock, that's, the speakers are still on.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are, you know, they're at the top of their sound possible. Yes, exactly. So they do create a lot of problem for many elderly people who want to have rest, who want to sleep. And if that is the case, of course, those who are in charge of these Husseinias and these mosques must, you know,
they should turn it down.
Turn down the loudspeakers and limit it, maybe, by lowering the volume of the public, of the speakers, or by directing the speakers inward instead of outward.
I see.
And that is the solution.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave. Mankind's heart it reawaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein plan to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred bridge. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new lands.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, my dear friends, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a new episode of Back to Reality. Hope you're doing great and everything is just fine with you. Now that we have your precious attention, buckle up to fly beyond the surface of your favorite topics. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is Asma, at your service as the host. Well, as for our dear guests, I should say today is heaven. I have two of my very dear amazing friends, and together we'd provide some captivating, thought-provoking stuff for you. And I forgot to tell you that both of them are Zainab. So I shall add that S on you, Zainab.
Yes. However, okay. I'm Zainab Sadat.
Okay, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I have my BA in English Language and Literature and my MA in Teaching English as a Foreign Language. And of course, one of my big interests is in religious studies. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because of my interest and my studies that I have the privilege of sitting in front of you today.
Oh, no, then on the other side, I have my dear one, Zainab.
Zainab Askari. Yes. Assalamu alaikum. I have done my master's in linguistics from India.
Yes.
And then I am still engaged in religious studies in the Hafsa of Qum.
Today's topic is actually about Muharram. The first month of the Islamic calendar starts with Imam Hussein alayhi salam and the story of Ashura. We mourn and weep deeply from the core of our hearts, and we offer our humble condolences to his son, the promised Savior, Imam Mahdi, ajalallah faraja. The love that we have for him is like a burning ember that will never cease to exist. We go through this story every year, and we recall it whenever we hear his name. Yet the mysterious point is that we never get tired of it, and each year we feel as if it's been renewed. The cut inside our heart seems to have gone deeper, as well as the bond we share with his family. The whole idea of Muharram seems rather odd and beyond understanding. And now I'd like to start the discussion with the importance of Muharram. What do you think we can get from Muharram? What is the importance of cherishing this month that much?
Crying and mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Apart from its great influences, you know, the good and the influence, the positive influences,
the benefits and the blessings.
Yes, of mourning for Imam al-Hussein. There's so much that cannot be mentioned,
of course,
in a simple episode in 15 or 20 minutes.
Yes, it's like an ocean that we're just diving into it.
Yes, definitely. And the influences of it on every person leads to the good society. What should we cry for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam?
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
I believe that, first of all, one of the main reasons for me to cry for him is justice. Justice that he gave his life for. You know, that's quite precious for me. It requires a great personality.
He actually sacrificed his entire being and family for justice.
He paid a heavy
price
for what he wanted, which was justice. Mm-hmm. And that's a great lesson for us. You know, when I personally start to cry for Imam al-Hussein, I start to think that he wanted justice. All he wanted was justice, but they deprived him and the whole society of that. And he wanted to defend other people and defended the deprived justice. And that's a great lesson for us too. You know, if we know what he exactly was sacrificed for in modern society, mm-hmm. In our everyday life, we would defend it. And that has a great influence on our lives.
Of course. I see. So Zainab is talking about the influence of weeping and crying and generally mourning in the month of Muharram. And now let's have the ideas and opinions of Zainab upon this month.
As we talk about Muharram, mm-hmm. since I come from another country, a non-Muslim country, people listen about Muharram, they non-Muslims, rather, mm-hmm. or even Sunni Muslims, they have a concept that now there's a month of crying.
Zainab, just before you start, is it like this in your country that everywhere turns into black? The streets are covered with black.
Not everywhere, I'll say, but wherever there are Shias living in, it turns into black streets.
So you also go through the same thing as we see in our society.
Yes. So some parts of the society, not every, like wherein mm-hmm. there are non-Muslims, obviously it's not there. But yes, sometimes even non-Muslims do respect. They come and they try to help you, like, you know.
I know what you mean.
And all.
Yeah.
So there's a religious harmony in India.
Even the non-believers usually lend you a helping hand in these sort of things.
Yes, they start, like, you know, giving water to others in Muharram and all. Mm-hmm. They start doing so many good things. Because Hussein is for all.
Exactly, yeah.
Hussein is That's for humanity. Well, you talked about the influence and importance. Some people think that this month is just for crying and mourning, and that's it. But as Sister Sadat put it rightly, like, it's not just mourning in this month. It comes up with a lot of teachings. For example, we go out for gatherings, the Muharram gatherings usually. We are guests at the same time we are the hosts.
Uh-huh.
You're feeding and you're getting so much
exactly,
in return.
Yeah.
You're the guest of Imam Hussein. You're feeding others. And, yeah, you know, you are host and guest at the same time. You get to learn a lot of things.
His mother is the one actually who's going to reward you.
Yes. There's a cultural dimension. There's a cultural transmission. For example, wherever you start, if you see a learning process, mm-hmm, you see there's a generation gap. But this is the only school of thought. These gatherings are the only things wherein you see children coming in, yeah, you see aged women coming in, you see aged men coming in, you see youth coming in, you see everyone. There's no gender, nothing. This education is not separated by a generation, exactly, gap. Everyone comes to these, mm-hmm, gatherings, and everyone has some...
And gender is not going to make any difference.
Make any difference in the learning process, actually. It's not just mourning, it's learning.
So whoever comes there would get something out of it.
Exactly. When there were no universities, when there were no colleges, when there were no schools, these gatherings of Muharram were the places wherein you would get to know about the history of Islam. When there was a cultural transmission, when there was, you would get acquainted and familiar with Imam, with history, yeah, with Islam, with everything.
And that's why actually Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, says that it's Muharram and Safar that are keeping the Islam alive.
Exactly. And because you get familiar with what is Islam. It's not just, you know, you're crying, mm-hmm, about, yeah, Imam. You get familiar with who Imam was.
You have some moments to think.
You know, when you're in these gatherings, definitely there's a speech before you start mourning or anything.
Yeah,
mourning,
exactly,
is the last part. But before that, you get to know about who Imam was, what he sacrificed for.
Now that we're talking of Muharram, I would have a condition for you. Just imagine there would be a year and you are stopped from mourning. What would happen? What would it bring to life?
You know, as I just said, you know, it's not only the matter of mourning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we cry a lot for lots of issues that happen to our everyday life.
Yeah.
And those crying.
But it gets cooled down, you know. After some years, everything would simmer down.
But not about Imam al-Hussein.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yes,
it's very odd and mysterious.
Yes, and this is what I'm saying. You know, when you cry for an ordinary issue, that crying brings you negative energy.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes you feel bad. But about Imam al-Hussein, no, that's not the case.
Yeah, yeah, that's
maybe
true.
At the very moment of crying and mourning, you feel sad, you feel so sorrowful.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after a while, when you know that we have lots of hadith saying and narrating that the eyes who cry for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, for the tragedy of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, would be the happiest on the Day of Judgment.
Yeah, and also Zainab, in this life, after we leave those gatherings, when you come out of it, you feel like a, you know, emotional release.
Exactly.
You feel like you've been purified.
Exactly. You feel light.
Exactly. That, like a feather.
Yeah, there's also been a research about tears.
Yeah.
What tears take out of your eyes.
That's very interesting.
If it was just normal tears, they bring about 90% of water and other chemicals, 10%.
Yeah.
But if your tears are emotional, if your tears are emotional, they're getting to release stress hormones. 90% of the water that's coming out, it's not the water, it's the stress hormones you're releasing.
That was
the research
nice.
I went through. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, and quite so true about this case.
She was saying like about the, apart from narrations as well, we have something that supports mourning, and a Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, was the first one to do that.
Yeah, so to do the mourning.
Yes, so it's a sunnah.
So
it's,
you both
because
say
in
that
many,
this
many cases,
mourning is a sort of sacred praying.
I would like to add a little to what you asked her.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said that, see, we realized that since 2 years, since past 2 years, there was a ban, there was COVID, there was no gatherings.
A nice point to mention, actually.
Yeah. So there was no this gathering, but the love did not stop. Why? Yeah, so yeah. I think you kind of wanted to ask this, like, why did not the love for Imam Hussein stop? Why did not, like, we did not observe gatherings?
So what is the reason, according to you?
The reason is what Imam Hussein al-Islam stood for. The message of Karbala. See, it was peace. As long as there's peace, Imam Hussein's name is going to be there. Mm-hmm. As long as there's justice, Imam Hussein's name is going to be there. As long as there's Islam, yeah, Imam's name is going to be there. See, the COVID ban on gatherings could not stop justice, could they? Could not stop not. Peace, mm-hmm. did they? Nothing could stop Islam, could yeah. it? So as long as peace, justice, and Islam is on, Imam al-Islam's name is alive.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned in the very beginning, it's mm-hmm. like that, you know,
it's an fire, ember, yeah, in our chest. It would burn forever.
Yes.
And it will never cease.
It will never cease.
Yeah. And Zainab, according to you, what are the reasons for this love that we share with him?
This love is something innate, I guess, and something that we have been dealing with since childhood.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, especially we as Shias, we have been learned when our mothers were feeding us,
yeah,
they gave us the love of Imam Hussein and Ahlul Bayt.
There's a thing, Zainab, even those who have been living in a Western society and they mm-hmm. come to know him after they're 30 or whatever, just in an old age.
And even non-Muslims as well.
Yes. What happens
like
to them?
I'd like to tell you one thing. Since like when I got acquainted with Imam Hussein al-Islam, I got acquainted him after visiting his grave. You know, I mean, I was not into religious studies yet. I didn't know Imam Hussein much because we... Mm-hmm.
So you went for him and then you started to know him?
I as a child was born or grown up in a society where only my family was a Shia family.
Oh.
So it was really hard for us to explore, to say that we are Shias, just for the security reasons and all. So we couldn't explore much. We couldn't know much about Imam and yeah. all. But whenever this name would come, there was some, you know, that curiosity to know. There was some, I don't know, sadness automatically.
Exactly.
And when I just certainly on Arbaeen, I got a chance to visit Karbala. And the moment I was standing just some feet behind the shrine, I could see tears up till my, you know, throat. And I was like, what's happening?
Unconsciously, that happens without you even deciding for
I mean,
that.
I was,
right, Zainab?
Yes.
I did not even know Imam Hussein at that time. And mm-hmm. I was like, my face was full of it. I could not control myself. And that was, you know, yes, the love for Imam Hussein is because... If you are an oppressor, you're guilty yourself. But if you stand for justice, if you stand for peace yourself, if you have a pure heart, and if you have sincerity like him, since he had sincerity, he had khalus, that's why his love is not to be...
That's very true. Now for me and the entire cast of Back to Reality, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you with his never-sleeping eyes. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah... يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك Let us see daylight again, once again.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
The chest fever in the southern Indian city of Chennai is on a peak as the 44th International Chess Olympiad kicks off there. Students created a mammoth chessboard on the playground and dressed up as 32 chess pieces to promote the game. For 2 weeks, Chennai is hosting nearly 2,000 players from 188 countries. for the first time in nearly 100 years of history, the Chess Olympiad, India is playing host. The event will run until August 10th. Ahead of the game, 150 underprivileged children from various government schools were given the opportunity to fly. These were the students who won in a district-level chess tournament. Excited spectators gather at the Solberg Airport in the U.S. for the 39th New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning.
We have about 45 balloons here today, including these spectacular special shapes. Our signature New Jersey Lottery Sunny Days balloon. You can see the tiger. Unicorn is hiding behind there. Tasmanian Devil, unique photo panda. We are having a spaceship. There's Billy the Kid. Spectacular presentation. You won't believe your skies this weekend.
Dozens of hot air balloons were test-inflated in preparation for the real deal. The festival is considered the largest summertime event in New Jersey. Reddington City officials have predicted about 170,000 people will join the festival over the weekend. Weather forecasts say the skies are gentle enough for over 100 balloons to take flight in the morning and evening in mass ascents. And no one is more excited than the festival producer, who has been planning the event for months.
Including these spectacular special shapes. The balloons bring out the kid in everyone. You know, I've done this for a long time. This is the 39th annual one. But still, when I hear that propane whirring and these balloons going up, it makes the hair on my arm stand up.
The producer says these balloons will be handled by professional pilots and other balloons will be available for rides. The festival will last for 3 days, ending with food vendors, games, amusement rides, and other entertainment. There will also be a massive fireworks display, as well as a nighttime feature of glowing balloons. The annual festival is the largest seasonal hot air balloon festival in North America. It draws in thousands of visitors every year.
You might think twice about throwing out your old trainers after this story. A startup in Tunisia breathes new life into old shoes as artists restore and even customize the footwear. The new business is called Kenenti and is located in the capital, Tunis. Here, the team uses fabrics, laces and leather recovered from various factories for the repair work. The creative artists work on every detail during each project, even the soles of the shoes. The work aims to find solutions to shoe waste and reuse items instead of adding them to the world's landfills. Cherif Zeroui is the co-founder of Kenenti. He says the idea came to him 2 years ago when he discovered the number of shoes thrown away each year in Tunisia.
In France, there were 100 million pairs of shoes thrown away every year. This is a huge figure for us, and for the ecosystem and for the earth. In Tunisia, it's almost the same given the population. There were 3 or 4 million shoes thrown away every year. So we thought of giving added value to these shoes, so we restored them.
Zerbui also says he is happy to create jobs for those willing to participate regardless of the educational degree. Besides shoes, these artists dabble in restoring worn-out handbags, giving them a brand new look. Many of the artists and interns say they are proud to be part of this unique project. They say they feel like a family there. The startup is the first trainer restoration business to be launched in North America. Would you buy a pair of scrap tire sandals? Well, in the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi, you will find all kinds of handmade sandals from recycled tires. The famously rugged footwear of the Viet Cong have traveled vast distances over the decades. Shoemakers use sharp knives and chisels to craft a sandal from huge tires. For those seeking a nod to yesteryear, the hard sole sandals are available at markets and small stores alike
with prices ranging from $2,000 to $1,000. The Vietnamese first began making rubber sandals in the late 1940s during the First Indochina War against the French, using ties from ambushed army trucks. They found the sandals were cheap to make and survive well in wet, muddy and hilly conditions. Even in peacetime, the design remains popular for sustainability reasons. Living through a pandemic is strange, as we are often locked indoors, but a UK-based Indian mechanical engineer made the best use of his time during the coronavirus lockdown and built an airplane. 38-year-old Ashok Ali Serial, who is also a private pilot, had long dreamt of a personal aircraft. He initially planned to order an aircraft kit and built it with his colleagues, but he says the 2020 lockdown left him with no choice but to complete it on his own. Now he has an aircraft which he has named after his youngest daughter, Dia. The plane can carry up to four people, including the pilot, and fly about 250 kilometers an hour. After getting clearance to fly, he flew across four European countries with his friends. He has also gone on a trip with his family of four.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed patch. Valeria tried to remove the tank, but ultimately, because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year. British paleontologists have made an exciting fossil discovery, which has been identified as the earliest known animal predator.
It's quite a large fossil. The preserved part is at least 20 centimetres tall, and it would have lived attached to the seafloor bottom. But it's a broken specimen, so we actually don't know how large the entire colony is. This is only a fragment of it.
Wilby says the animal had a stalk and a cup on top with little tentacles, which most likely used to catch a food out of the water. The ancient animal is related to sea anemones, jellyfish and corals, and pushes the known existence of these species back to 20 million years. Wilby explains the fossil displays a key point in the evolution of animal. The fossil is said to be around 560 million years old and was discovered in Charnwood Forest, northern England, amongst over 1,000 other fossils.
Summer heat is here, and zoos are working to not only keep visitors cool, but animals safe during the hot weather. A Belgian zoo takes extra precautions to help animals survive a fierce heat wave that has left Western Europe sweltering. Pierre Deyser Zoo, located in Wallonia in the province of Hainaut, provides animals with frozen food, fruit suspended in water and extra showers. It has also created extra shaded areas with good ventilation along with water points to ensure animals have access to them. Zookeepers say managing animals in high temperatures requires good forward planning. Zoos across the world have a variety of responses to keep animals cool. So we humans are not the only creatures who feel significant stress during the hot months. Animals, too, are impacted by it.
Iran's city of Rafsanjan has hosted an international talent contest dubbed Stage Stars. The event is aimed at providing a chance for stage talents from across the world to come in the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali reports from Rafsanjan. Let's check it out.
This is a global stage for talents. The fifth International Stage Stars Festival wrapped up with the announcement of winners, who have been competing in four categories of singing, voice acting, show hosting, and sound impression. The top performances from each category won the golden mic and a cash prize.
The festival was a place for more serious competition between those who have a say in a stage performance. I'm so happy to be chosen by the jury as the best show host of the contest.
It was an amazing event for talents. I'm so glad to be part of this. Talents from all across Iran and many parts of the world competed in the festival, so winners should be proud of themselves.
Held in Iran's city of Rafsanjan, the two-day event brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, Kyrgyzstan, Nigeria, and Turkey, to flaunt their neck for stage performance.
The scale of this contest is global. Many of us participants did not have any idea we could be stand-up comedians or show hosts. But when we got on stage here, we ourselves discovered our own talents.
I really love that, seeing that people around the world are coming here and presenting themselves. It's a very great feeling. Of course, they will be progressed and they will develop yourself when they will get the result.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say the competition has been tough, and those who stood out are real stage stars.
We tried our best to pick talents who really acted like professionals on stage. Not only should they care about the standards and principles of a stage performance, but they must innovate, improvise, and stand out.
This festival acted like a university for stage talents. It taught a lot of lessons about the stage to participants, especially for those who failed to win the contest.
Organizers say this contest is not just about scouting for stage talents. They say the event helps shine a spotlight on talents and lead them to their community.
The fifth Stage Stars Festival is aimed at bringing stage talents to light. Many of the participants already have a few years of experience, so this stage is not supposed to discover them, but to springboard them to a higher level in their careers.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival.
To those who won the golden mic here, this is a dream come true. But they say, aside from the prize, Stage Stars has marked a milestone in their pursuit of success, since they have now come under the spotlight. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Qadhimiyya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamari that he says in Farsi, Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
The
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Very welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction to the lives and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shia dignitaries, scholars, and ulama. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhrani. Dr. Fakhrani, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum.
And Sheikh Mahdavi, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
At the very beginning of this program, I would like to express my condolences on the arrival of the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on the 10th day of the month of Muharram, that is Ashura, and his faithful companions. For today's discussion, we want to talk about an author, Marjay Taqlid, a faqih, we can say an Islamic scholar, who compiled the work Al-Arba'in al-Husayniyah. He is no one but Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qumi. Dr. Fakhrani, let's start with you, brother. Give us some information about the early life and the biography of Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qumi.
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The late Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qumi was born in Qom in 1273 according to Lunar Hijra calendar, and he himself identified himself as Mirza Muhammad Qumi.
Yes.
His father was Muhammad Taqi Beik Arbab, who was also known as Arbab Jan Baba in Qom, and his father was one of the great literary dignitaries of the city of Qom. And also his father composed a poetic maqtala of Imam al-Hussein as well as a history of the city of Qom, and bearing the title Darul Iman Qom. I mean, yes. Qom as the cradle of Islamic faith.
Yes, right. Which these two outstanding works are not found yet,
yes,
maybe. Okay.
Yes.
The original manuscript is not found.
Yes.
Okay.
Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qumi was also a great dignitary. He himself was a great dignitary, and he was one of the students and disciples of the late Sheikh Ansari in Najaf.
Yes.
He was a mujtahid, and he was, a dignitary in the city of Qom before the establishment of Hoze Elmiye Qom,
yes,
the Qom seminary. And it proves that, Qom had long been an important Shia seminary, although its fame, goes back to two eras in history. One in the era after the occultation of Imam al-Mahdi al-Islam in the time of Sheikh al-Saduq, and to the recent, era, after it was re-established or reorganized by the late Ayatollah Sheikh Abdul Karim Hayri Yazdi.
That's all right.
Okay. Also, it must be indicated that the late Mirza Muhammad Arbab lived around 68 years,
yes,
and he passed away in 1341 according to Hijra calendar, and his tomb is located in the Sheikhan Cemetery,
yes,
quite close to the shrine in Qom.
That's all right. Okay, Sheikh Mahdavi, Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qumi, beside all his scholarly life and compilations of the outstanding works, is known by his outstanding work, that is Arba'in al-Husayniyah, and also some of the poems that he authored and compiled regarding Ahlul Bayt, especially Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. What is this book exactly, and what was the main intention of the author to compile such a book?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. My condolences on the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his loyal companions. So regarding this book, we have to say, as the title of the book suggests, it's talking about a collection of the ahadith, or better to say 40 hadith regarding the Imam Hussein, his martyrdom, the month of Muharram, those who are participating in majalis of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Before we talk about the book, I think it's good to touch the motive of,
yes,
Sheikh Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qumi, why he authored such a book.
Yes, very good.
As it is mentioned, he is saying that I was given the task of proofreading of Baharul Anwar from my teacher Mirza Muhaddis Nuri.
Okay.
And during that task, I lost my eyesight. And I made a pledge to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if I get cured, mm-hmm, I will write 40 hadiths regarding Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Or I will write a book, in fact.
Yes, okay. Actually it had been put in a shape of book.
Okay.
So It's a kind of divine intention behind authoring such a book. And when we look at the topics of the book, we see that you can give a kind of chronological line to all topics that had been classified in the shape of the book. Why I'm saying this? Because the ahadith regarding Imam Hussein alayhi salam are starting from the month of Muharram, and then it talks about the merits of crying eyes upon this martyrdom, and then the lecture of Sayyid al-Shahada in Mecca moving forward till the end, I mean the captivation of the family of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and even talking about the revenge that will be taken from the murderers and killers of Imam Hussein by Hazrat Mahdi Ajjalallah.
Sorry, are there 40 hadiths or 40 topics?
It's 40 topics that had been collected, 40 hadiths regarding these 40.
Regarding this.
Yes.
And all of them are authentic hadiths.
Yes, I wanted to say that when he start talking about one hadith, he will talk about that hadith in something around 4 or 5 subtopics. You may say ishara, tarjuma, bayanat, fa'ida, tanbih. Sometimes regarding some of the ahadith, he may add some other subtopics like sirrun latif, meaning a secret behind this hadith. Or tanbihun, meaning a warning or lesson that we may take from this hadith.
That's right.
But for all of the ahadith, in the first chapter of each hadith, which is called ishara, he's trying to talk about the authenticity of the hadith, starting from himself, that myself, I heard from my teacher, Muhaddith Nuri, he heard from that teacher, and goes back up until the authenticated book of Shia.
That's
sometimes
right.
It reaches to the most authenticated, I mean those four books.
Yes.
Al-Kafi, Man La Yahduruhu Al-Faqih, and the other two. And sometimes it goes to the books which had been written during the 7th or 8th centuries.
Yes.
But this is a very important thing that he has dealt with the authenticity of the hadith. He is trying to bring the whole chain of the transmitters of the hadith. Then he goes to the tarjumah.
That's right.
Since the book has been written in Farsi, so he will give the translation of the hadith.
That's right.
And bayanat, the lessons that you may take. Over there, in this topic, he will merge some other ahadith in relation to the main hadith, which has been taken the chapter.
So, although the title is in Arabic, Arba'inul Husayniyah, but the content is in Farsi language, in Persian language. That's all right.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
The authenticity was so much important for Mirza Abu Qumi that even he criticizes some of the methods used by the writers of the martyrdom account, or we say maqatil or maqtal, by Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam,
yes,
Dr. Fakh Rouhani. Talk a little bit about this aspect of scholar writing or style of Mirza Arbab Qumi regarding Khasais al-Husayniyah.
First and foremost, it must be indicated that when the title... the title of the book, we find that it's phrased in Arabic.
Yes.
It must be indicated that right from the time of the Safavid era up to the end of the Qajar period.
Yes.
And to some extent, up to some years after the Qajar era, we find that Persian speaking and also Urdu speaking authors, okay, preferred to phrase the titles of the books in Arabic. Mm-hmm. However, they preferred to develop the books either in Persian or in, for example, Urdu in the case of the Indian subcontinental nations.
Okay.
But, I mean, going back to your main question, yes, regarding Maqtals, it must be indicated
Ms. Arbab Qomi as the main criticizer of,
yes,
Maqtals and the distortions and the deviations,
yes,
that found,
yes,
their way into the story of Karbala.
Yes. The point is simply that we find that, I mean, with regard to any historic event and historical incident, we find that little by little throughout the history, some people, some later generations, come to think something about those events, and they might add some other bits of information to the main topic. However, the late Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qomi,
yes,
prevented people from doing so with, mm-hmm, regard to the Shia history as it pertains to the life and times of the infallible Imams, and in this case, regarding Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, because this aspect of history should be kept as intact and purified as possible, because with addition of any distorted version or distorted message, we don't know, what kind of catastrophe would be brought about, through doing this. And
that's all right.
In his writings, and especially in the book Al-Arba'in Al-Husayniya, he tried to prevent people from doing so, simply because, first and foremost, it's a kind of, telling lie or reporting something untrue. Another one is that, it entails ascribing something to an infallible imam.
That's right.
And in both cases, something quite unforgivable, haram, religiously speaking,
yes,
would be made.
That's all right. Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qomi was also famous for, we can say, his poetic collections and his poems regarding the Ahlul Bayt, Imam Asr, Ajalallah, and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. In one part of his famous poem about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, also referring to the story of Karbala, he says in Farsi, ببین ما را اسیر بند کفار گرفتار شکنج روزگاران قدم در کربلا بگذار و بستان سر پرخون ز دست نیزداران توی دست خدا از شست قدرت بکش تیر از گلوی شیرخاران خبرداری که از سم ستوران دگر جسمی نماند از شهسواران. You know, he is referring to Imam Zaman alayhi salam ajalallah as the true revenger of the blood of Imam,
yes,
al-Hussein alayhi salam, calling him to come and be a remedy or cure to the broken hearts of the Muslims and the Shias. Really beautiful poems and really beautiful pieces of verses of poets regarding Imam Zaman and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Okay. Anything missed, Sheikh Mahtavi?
I think also this aspect of his expertise must be mentioned, that he was a great codicologist as well.
Yes, yes.
Most of the Shia books had been proofread by him,
yes, yes,
namely Al-Ghaybah Lil-Nu'mani or Isbat Al-Wasiyah Lil-Mas'udi, and also, as I said, Baharul Anwar. So it shows that his expertise was not only confined to one field of study.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, he was a poet, he,
yes,
was a catechologist, he was a faqih and jurist. And also besides all of this, he dedicated his life to Minbar al-Husseini and speaking about the Hussein alayhi salam. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala resurrect him and ourselves, along with Imam Hussein and his companions, inshallah.
Inshallah. And these authors, like Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qomi, we can say the compiler of the book Al-Arba'in al-Husseiniya, really felt committed to write at least a book, but based on authentic resources about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. And when a faqih, a knowledgeable man, a mujtahid, looks at the story of Karbala and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the passion, the shur and the knowledge, a ma'rifah, come together, compiling a work such as this, which becomes, the most authentic work. This outstanding man, Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qomi, passed away in the year 1341 according to the solar Hijri calendar, and he's buried in Sheikh Khan Cemetery in the holy city of Qom, the burial place of this outstanding man and so many other great ulama of the world of Shia Islam. May Allah bless his soul, the author and compiler of Arba'in al-Husayniyah. Thank you much, Sheikh Mahdavi and Dr. Fakhwani. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher, which was about Mirza Muhammad Arbab Qomi. To another episode and introducing another Shia dignitary, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
I begin in the name of Allah, the Most Kind, the Most Merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. We then send our condolences to our 12th and living Imam, Al-Hujja, Ajalallahu Ta'ala, Farajahu Sharif, and to each and every one of you. As we gather on these nights to commemorate the tragedy that befell upon the family of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum. You know, tonight we remember the masaib of a young boy, huh? A young boy who had his muhaj aligned with Imam al-Husayn, who had his entire existence aligned with Imam al-Husayn. But let's start by remembering his father, Imam al-Hasan. May our fathers and mothers be sacrificed for Imam al-Hasan. You know, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam reports that one day Imam al-Husayn came to see his brother. And when he saw him, he began to cry. Imam al-Husayn began to cry. فَلَمَّا نَظَرَ إِلَيْهِ بَقَى, the tradition says, فَقَالَ مَا يُبْكِيكَ يَا أَبَا عَبْدِ اللَّهِ. Imam al-Hasan says that, oh Hussein, oh Aba Abdullah, what makes you cry? And he says, I'm crying because of what will happen to you, my brother. To which Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam replies, what will be done to me is that I will be given poison. And I will succumb to this poison. But he says, وَلَكِنْ لَا يَوْمْكَ يَوْمُكَ يَا أَبَا عَبْدِ اللَّهِ. But O Hussein, there is no day like your day, O Hussein. When 30,000 people will attack you, Hussein, and these will be from the ummah of our grandfather, they will assemble to kill you, they will spill your blood, they will violate your sanctity. They will take your women and children captives and they will seize your property, O Hussein. La yawmka yawmuka ya Aba Abdullah. But Imam al-Hasan prepared for this day. It is said four children of Hassan were there present in Karbala. Three became shaheed. One, Hassan al-Muthanna, survived and later rebelled and was killed after that, 25 years later. He gave Abu Bakr, who was the oldest, bin Hassan. He gave Abdullah. But tonight we remember Qasim. This young boy of the son of Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam. You know, on the night of Ashura, when Imam alayhi salam had gathered his companions together, and he told them, you can leave, and they all gave their allegiance one by one. He just said, there was a young boy standing at the end of the khaymah. And this young boy comes towards his uncle and he says, Ya Amma, O Hussein, O my uncle, wa ana fi man yuqtal. He says, will I be amongst those who become shaheed? Imam alayhi salam looked at him tenderly. Imam alayhi salam looked at him lovingly. And he says, Ya Bunayya, kayfal mawta indak. Look at the test of Aba'at. He says, my son, how do you find death? To which Qasim replies, Ya Amma, ahla min al-asad. Salam, Qasim, salam. He says, oh my uncle, death with you is sweeter than honey. Imam alayhi salam embraces him and says, Ay wallah fidaka ammuk. He says, may your uncle be ransomed for you, O Qasim. Indeed, you will be amongst those who become martyred tomorrow. On the day of Ashura, when the Banu Hashim's time came, it is said Qasim would come to Imam al-Hussein. You know, some scholars say that when Qasim would come to Imam al-Hussein, Imam would turn his back away from Qasim. Imam did not want to see Qasim. Why? Because he knew this was something difficult for him. This was something not easy for Imam alayhi salam. It is said finally, falamma nazara ilay, when finally Hussein looked at Qasim, i'tanaqahu, he embraces Qasim, a embrace of love, wa ja'ala bay yabkiyan, and they began to cry in each other's eyes. They knew this was the wida. They knew this was the farewell. The tradition said they cried so much that it was like they were about to faint. And then Qasim asks for permission. But Imam alayhi salam refuses. He says, I cannot give you permission, Qasim. Ah, I ask myself all the time, why? Hussein had told him, you will be shaheed tomorrow. Hussein had informed him. But now Qasim comes, he would not give him this permission. Why? Because Qasim was the amanat of Imam al-Hassan. The trust that was given by Imam al-Hassan was Qasim. Imam had raised him like his own child. Imam had raised him in his wilaya. It was not easy for Qasim to go. You know what Qasim begins to do? The narration says, Qasim begins to kiss the hands and the feet of Imam. He begins to kiss the feet and the hands of Imam alayhi salam, begging him, let me go, let me go. I want to do my service. I want to give my service to Islam, to the Imam of my time and to my uncle. Finally, the Imam alayhi salam allows Qasim to go. It is said Qasim goes out towards the battlefield, a young boy. It is said he was so young that there was no armor that would fit around the body of Qasim. It was Qasim and a sword. He comes out. The narration says that when a young boy stepped out, his face was shining like a full moon. We asked, who is this boy? It is said, Hada, this is the son of Imam al-Hassan. Wa Qasima. It is said Qasim fought beautifully, fought valiantly. But there came a man by the name of Amr bin Sa'd al-Azdi, this mal'oon, saw an opportunity. And he says to one of the narrators, by God, I am going to strike this boy. The narrator says, what has he done to you? Eventually he will fall. Let him be, he is a young boy. But this man, Amr ibn Sa'd, comes and he strikes Qasim on the head. It is said when Qasim falls, he begins to call out, Ya Amma, Ya Amma, oh my uncle, oh my uncle. It is said by the narrators, and nowhere do we find a duplicate of this, that Imam rushes from the tents when Qasim calls. He rushes from the tents. He did not do this for Ali ibn al-Akbar because Ali was his sacrifice. But this was that amanat when he called him. The narrator actually says that he flew out of the tents like an eagle and attacked the enemies like a raging lion. It is said he struck this Amr with his sword. Amr began to call out to his helpers to come. When the Kufan